Love Sport Radio. On digital radio, online, mobile, and smart speaker. This is Upfront on Love Sport.
You're listening to a podcast edition of The James Gray Show. You can listen to me live every weekday from 1:30 p.m. on Love Sport Radio, on DAB Digital, online, or on your Alexa smart speaker. And if you're listening to the podcast, do leave us a rating and a review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Love Sport.
Sometimes the football season ends, the Premier League season ends, and we sit around as journalists and say, oh, what are we going to do now? What are we going to talk about? There is no shortage of stuff to talk about. We've got an absolutely packed show. In a few minutes, we'll be speaking to Chris Perry, former Charlton and, of course, Tottenham defender. He'll be joining us down the line, as will our man in Madrid, Guy Watts. But I want to talk about this final from a managerial perspective, because it pits two very fashionable, very likeable, very interesting, relatively young managers against one another. Probably in their biggest game as managers. Certainly for Mauricio Pochettino. Jurgen Klopp, of course, has been here before in a different capacity. But it's massive for both of them because it's a Champions League final. It's kind of a truism to say, yes, it's a big game because it's a Champions League final. It's always going to be a big game. But I think for Jurgen Klopp, he sees this as a bit of a bonus, really, because there's no question that Liverpool are a top side in European and English football. It's their second consecutive Champions League final. They finished 1 point behind a City side who've been touted as one of the best of all time. Everyone knows that this Liverpool side are going to be here again. They will invest. And John Henry's already said that winning the Champions League wouldn't make up for missing out on the title, and they will go and spend more money this summer to make sure they win the Premier League title. And I believe him. And I don't think anyone doubts Liverpool from that perspective. In fact, I don't think many people doubt Liverpool full stop. Maybe last year, you could have said, oh, you've got Joel Matip at centre-back and Loris Karius in goal. Oh, it's a flawed team. You got a lucky run through to the Champions League final. I don't think you can say that with a straight face about Liverpool this year. They've got a world-class centre-half who has settled in. They've got a brilliant goalkeeper, a front three who it's hard to pick the best of, depending on what day of the week it is, a rotating squad of five or six central midfielders, the two most productive full-backs in Premier League history. Where is the weakness? Where is the weakness in that team? Sure, they're going to have bad days at the office. They all do. And we saw a little bit of a weakness in their mentality when they drew with Leicester at Anfield, an opportunity to really stamp their name on the trophy in the Premier League title race. But I don't see, in terms of playing staff, what you could possibly say about them in terms of weakness. Tottenham, meanwhile, and Mauricio Pochettino, I think this is a much, much bigger game. And I agree with Danny Murphy that this is an enormously important game for them as a project. Because Mauricio Pochettino is just going past 5 years as Tottenham manager. Now, that's a long time. I think he's the fifth most long-serving manager in the English Football League at the moment. Of 92 clubs, only four men, and I think it's off the top of my head, Jim Bentley, Gareth Ainsworth, Eddie Howe and Sean Dyche. They're the only four men who have served longer at their club than Mauricio Pochettino. Now, some people, and I think pretty childishly, will say, oh, what has he got to show for it? Well, I'll tell you what he's got to show for it. He's got one of the most spectacular stadiums in world football. He's got two or three players who would get in, or at least very close, to an all-England 11. He's got a squad who believe in him, and a fan base that are more excited than perhaps they've ever been since the early 80s anyway. So he's got plenty to show for it, if it doesn't necessarily mean a trophy. And this is the problem, really, that football fans are obsessed with other people's trophies. They can defend their own team to the hilt, saying, oh, but we play spectacular football and I love the players so much and it's just great fun to watch them at the moment. But when it comes to criticising other clubs, all they do is say, oh, your trophy cabinet's empty. I know for a fact that producer Mike has a mock-up of the Tottenham trophy cabinet with various different non-trophies in it. They kind of relish that. But deep down, and even not that deep down, Pochettino and Klopp know where they are. Pochettino knows that unless Tottenham spend big this summer, they won't necessarily be able to cement themselves on this stage. You know what will cement them? As a very top European club, a Champions League trophy. That's what this game means to Tottenham.
Love Sport.
Of course, we were counting down to this Champions League final, which I think we're all mildly excited about, and I'm sure a man who's on the line now is even more than that. Chris Perry, of course, a former Spurs player himself. Chris, as a man who knows Spurs as well as you do, did you ever imagine you might see them in a Champions League final in the near future?
I don't think, certainly not as quickly as it's happened, no. I mean, obviously, over the last few seasons, they've qualified for the Champions League a lot more often than they have done in the past. They've become more consistent in the league, but I think to imagine them reaching the final, I think was probably a step too far. You'd have thought, but I mean, this season has been absolutely sensational.
In terms of the squad itself, we talk a lot about the fact that Tottenham haven't bought a player in 18 months. Lucas Moura, their last sign in January 2018. Are you surprised with how they've stood up to the rigours of competing on multiple fronts, given, frankly, how unfreshened up that squad is?
A little. I think Pochettino's always said about that he does want to bring in new players, but he doesn't want to bring in players that aren't going to make the squad better. And I think that was the thing. They couldn't bring in, he couldn't find the players he wanted to bring in that he felt were going to improve the squad. And I think when you look at the squad, they've probably got a core of 14, 15 players that he really relies on and that he thinks he can depend on, you know, and they're a really good, strong core of 14, 15 players, but then they haven't got, when it goes past those 14, 15, they haven't then got the strength in depth, but he's been able to call on that group of 15 players quite a lot this season.
This obsession, it's kind of a football fan obsession now with transfers, and obviously that brings into focus this lack of activity at Tottenham. As players, do you talk about it as much? At this time of year, do you ever sit down at a meal and go, oh, do you see that thing in the paper about so-and-so might be coming? Do you get excited like we do?
When you're playing, you're probably a little bit wary of it. I mean, it depends where you are. You know, you're always thinking, "Oh, look, they're bringing in someone in my position, or he's going to make this team better. Am I going to be staying around and things like that?" You kind of worry about it from that point of view as a player. But no, I mean, it's always exciting this time of year, isn't it? When players get linked with clubs and you imagine how they fit into the side and that sort of thing.
How do you think Tottenham match up with Liverpool? I know when Spurs drew Man City in the quarterfinals, they were all quite disappointed because there was still a little bit of that, oh, but we want to play someone exotic in the Champions League. Do you think Liverpool is a good side for Spurs to play?
I do. Yeah, I do. I think when you look at the last league game, particularly second half when they changed the system a little bit, I think they dominated. They dominated the ball. They looked the better team. They were really unfortunate to lose with the Alderweireld own goal in the last minute. And actually, they can take a lot of confidence from that. And the fact that you know the team really well, I think, helps your preparation. You know, there's not going to be any surprises from Liverpool. Nothing they do is going to surprise Tottenham.
Do you think anything that Tottenham do will surprise Liverpool? Harry Kane, of course, is coming back from fitness. If he's 75%, would you rather have him as an impact sub or try and get him through an hour from the start?
I'm not sure. When you look at Pochettino in the past, whenever Harry Kane's been injured, he always comes straight back into the team, doesn't he? I think I'll be surprised if he doesn't. I think you'll probably be better. I think you'll probably see him start, maybe try and get an hour out of him, and then you've got Moura or Son or both from the bench, you know, to come on and change the game with their energy and their, you know, their speed and the different way that they play.
Is there any chance that Pochettino might try and protect Harry for himself? Because I know he says he's fit. And I think every player in this circumstance is going to lie through their teeth about how they're really feeling. Is there any chance that Pochettino might say, look, Harry, you could do some serious damage by playing today and sit him out?
Potentially. Yeah, potentially. I mean, he will know. I think Pochettino will have a really good idea just how fit he thinks Harry Kane is. Obviously, I mean, he's been training for the last few weeks, we know that, but you know, there's no substitute for actually playing, and he hasn't played a game for, I think, 7-8 weeks now, and just how long he would last and how effective he's going to be in such a crucial game, you know, is the big decision really that Pochettino's got to make, isn't it? You know, he's made some huge decisions over the season, and this is probably the biggest one he's going to have.
Chris, we talked a little bit about transfers earlier and one name that's been thrown around, actually haven't been many names thrown around for Tottenham, but one that has is Giovanni Lo Celso on loan from PSG at Real Betis. I know you watch a bit of La Liga and probably a lot more than I do. £50 million they're throwing around, which is obviously a massive number, but Have you seen enough of him to think that he might be the answer to the depth that Tottenham need in midfield?
I think he's a good player. I'm probably a similar sort of player to Eric Lamella in many ways. I'm not sure he's going to be an instant coming to the first team and make the first team better, but certainly you'll give them a lot more depth, without doubt.
Is that the kind of player that Tottenham need at the moment? I mean, if you think about, let's say Eriksen leaves, you'd think they need to replace him, or will actually they be able to grow and move other people into starting lineups to replace him?
I think he's the sort of player that could, in the long term, replace Christian Eriksen if Christian Eriksen were to leave. Whether he'll be ready to make that sort of impact immediately, you know, you'd think he would have been in and around the squad a little bit more of Paris Saint-Germain if he was that good. And not playing at Real Betis. No disrespect to Real Betis, but Paris Saint-Germain's a huger club.
Yeah. I also have to ask, Chris, because I know you spent time at Charlton as well, and we've been following that story very closely. We've become quite close to the club, and it's become a team close to my heart this year. It must have been brilliant to see them get back up into the second tier. You, of course, played for them when they were even higher up the pyramid.
Absolutely, yeah. It's always good to see. I mean, they've been through so much, haven't they? The fans and the club over the last few seasons with the owner, and, you know, just amazing, really, what Johnny Jackson and Lee Bowyer have been able to do with the squad, to galvanise them and to bring in players and to get them up. And it was really good to see, and I hope they do well in the Championship next season.
What have you made of that Lee Bowyer sort of emergence? You know, he came in as caretaker manager, I think, quite quietly when you consider the fanfare that Gerrard and Lampard and Campbell have had. What have you made of his debut in management? He certainly seems popular with the players.
I think it's been really good, yeah. As you say, he does seem very popular with the players, you know, and he's been able to get what he wants out of the players, get the best out of the players that he's got. I think the test is always probably your second season. You know, sometimes it's easy. Your first transfer window is always a big test when you've got these signings. Now you're going to be bringing in the players you release and you bring in. That's what you live and die by as a manager, and that's going to be the big test for him, I think.
Chris, just very quickly and finally, what's your prediction for the game tomorrow night? How do you see it going?
I don't know. I mean, it's difficult. When you look at all the stats, they all suggest Liverpool will win, but I just feel Tottenham's name's on it. I went for 2-1 for Spurs earlier in the week, so I'll stick with that.
Brilliant. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. Always a pleasure. That's Chris Perry there, former Tottenham and Charlton defender, picking Spurs for a 2-1 win tomorrow night. I don't like it. I don't agree with it, but he's entitled to his opinion, and boy, he probably knows more than I do about football anyway. It is a fascinating game for Tottenham because of the history. You have to remember that they've only beaten Liverpool once in the last 7 years, but this is a neutral venue. And the Champions League final can be in a bit of a vacuum. Obviously, it's in Madrid, which isn't vacuous at all. But you can have a situation where a lot of the history and pedigree of these teams goes out the window. And it might just come down to which side are able to deal with the occasion better. Liverpool, of course, have been there before. Another man who hasn't been there before, but he is this year, is our man in Madrid.
It's our guy in Madrid.
Yes, Guy Watts has got his shirt off somewhere in Madrid, presumably, and getting that tan that he so very much covets. Guy, where have you found yourself now?
I found myself, shirt on actually, James, thanks very much, in Plaza Mayor, in the centre of medieval Madrid. Madrid de los Austrias, in fact, dating back, that is, to the time where Madrid was ruled by the Habsburg Empire, I'll have you know. I've very much got my shirt on, as I say. I learned recently that you can be fined up to €200 in Spain for driving without a shirt on, so I'll be making sure I keep my top on if I do get behind the wheel of a car. I have no plans to at the moment. I have no plans to go very far from here for the next 24 hours or so. As we build up to kick off, of course, in just over 24 hours' time, the numbers of people in this square is swelling all the time. Certainly not a vacuum here on the Plaza Mayor. Liverpool fans by the bucket loads. Spurs fans increasing as we speak. I'm watching a young guy with Harry Kane shirt walk past, and there's also, interestingly, a man with a giant Mr. Bean mask on, and one of those, not just a mask, like a giant inflatable head.
Right.
I'm not quite sure what his vibe is or who he's supporting, but he's here as well.
Liverpool fans generally outnumbering Tottenham fans, it sounds like. How many, if you had to guess, are there lots of people out there who've travelled without tickets, not able to get into the game?
James, if the estimation of how many people are going to be at the game was done just off the people I've spoken to out here in Madrid, I suggest the stadium will be half empty. I've barely found anyone who's got a ticket. In fact, it's far outweighed by the number of people who have travelled without one. I hope that doesn't mean there are any problems tomorrow night, either kind of trouble-wise, people finding somewhere to watch the game. I imagine, given it's Madrid, there's not going to be a shortage of bars showing the game in some capacity. But yeah, I have been quite surprised to find out just how many supporters of both clubs actually have travelled here without a ticket. And by the way, while the Liverpool fans may outnumber the Spurs fans, certainly at the moment, a lot of Spurs fans saying the Liverpool fans were on earlier flights. We'll see if that's true. But there are some Spurs fans who have made some incredible journeys. I spoke to a guy earlier who cut short his year in Australia to be first at the semi-final and now out here in Madrid. He doesn't even have a ticket to tomorrow's game, by the way. I've spoken to Spurs fans from Thailand, from Hong Kong, from Ukraine, from Russia as well. It really is remarkable the distance some people have gone to just to be here in Madrid for the game.
Well, at least Madrid is a city with a proper international airport where you can actually get there, you know, unlike Baku earlier this week. What is the feeling among the two sets of fans? I know what Liverpool fans are like. They're always optimistic and, frankly, the run they've been on. But Tottenham fans are intrinsically pessimistic. They say they feel like they're cursed sometimes. Are they starting to talk up the chance they might be able to pull off an upset here?
Put it this way, I'm yet to speak to a fan of either side who has predicted a loss, a defeat for their team. I just spoke to four Liverpool fans on the Bell and Sperling show. They all predicted not just wins for Liverpool, convincing wins. There was one even predicting 5 or 6-1. Not sure if he's been on the cervezas here this afternoon or not yet, but he was making sense the rest of the time. Look, the Spurs fans are cautiously optimistic, whereas I'd say the Liverpool fans are, I don't know, what's the word? They have no doubt that their team is going to win and secure a sixth European Cup victory, whereas Spurs, hopeful, I think it's fair to say, of a first ever, but not expectant.
I believe a good description of religious faith is sure and certain hope. I think that's probably what football fans travel in. Harry Kane, as you mentioned, it's the name on the back of shirts and it's also the name on everyone's lips. I was talking to Danny Murphy earlier today. It was pretty much all we talked about was Harry Kane's fitness. If you were in charge, Guy, and I know you're a sort of wannabe football manager, you even own multiple waistcoats, would you be giving Harry the chance from the start or bring him on as an impact sub?
One of my waistcoats is actually getting refunded as we speak for him. It's the wrong size. I'm not going to keep it for the sake of it. Otherwise, James, though, yeah, good question. I personally, for what it's worth, wouldn't be risking him. Not because I don't think he's going to sort of have a recurrence of the injury. It doesn't seem to be that kind of injury. I just worry that his match fitness is not going to be there. I would want Harry Kane on in the last 10 minutes as a Spurs fan because I can't see the game being decided by then decisively, certainly not in Spurs' favour. So if you had a choice between is he going to be on the pitch at the start or the end, I'd want him on at the end. And if that means introducing him as a substitute, whether that's at half-time or with 20 minutes to go, I see that being a really, really strong option for Spurs because, look, it's not like starting with Lucas and Heung-min Son is by any means a bad option. So look, I'll understand if Poch goes for Kane from the start. He's a talisman. He's one of the best strikers, if not the best in Europe on his day. But I can't help but feel that having spent 8 weeks out, you know, throwing him in from the start in a Champions League final is going to be a bit of a risk.
Just finally, Guy, have you brought your Manchester United shirt with you? Have you dared to wear it yet?
I didn't in the end, James. I wasn't quite brave enough.
So
I'm not sure how well it would have gone down. I have to say the atmosphere has been pretty friendly, pretty, you know, relaxed. There have been corners, pockets of Liverpool fans being very, very vocal on both afternoons so far that I've been here. But nothing in an at all aggressive way. The police haven't looked too interested or flustered by anything that's gone on. The fans are mingling together both in this square at the Puerta del Sol just up the road and in the fan zones in the centre of the city. So, yeah, nothing untoward so far. I probably could have got away with wearing a Man United shirt. I have even admitted to the Liverpool fans that I've spoken to, in small groups that is, that I am a Man United fan. They've expressed sympathy more than anything else. And I think that's a measure, really, of how far away the clubs are at the moment. They don't need to say anymore.
Yeah, well, of course, we haven't seen Manchester United anywhere near a Champions League final in so long. Guy, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be speaking to our man in Madrid, our guy in Madrid, I suppose. It's sort of a joke, isn't it? Throughout the show, of course, he will be there outside the ground for the final as well. Very exciting, and I'm sure a little bit sunburnt when he comes back on Monday.
This is Love Sport.
Heaven forfend we have fun on this show, but occasionally we do, because I've seen a lot of Liverpool and Spurs combined 11s kicking around, and I thought it would be remiss of me not to do one myself. I apologise if it's a little biased, but I am a Liverpool fan. That said, one of my best mates is a Spurs fan, so I feel like I have a little bit of a foot in both camps anyway. Let's start in goal. I think it's a very straightforward decision. because I think Simon Mignolet is the best of all of them, obviously. No, I mean, clearly Alisson Becker is the choice in goal. You know, 2 years ago, that wouldn't have been the case, clearly. But his first season in English football has been excellent. There's not been many mistakes. Hugo Lloris, there have been a lot of mistakes. In the big games, he's had some good games, but he's had some really, really poor games. I just think Alisson Becker is a better bet. Now, in terms of shape, I think in order to best utilise the skills that I've got available to me, I'm sort of going to play a 5-2-1-2, if that makes any sense. Sort of 5-3-2 of sorts. But I'll run you through it and I think it'll make more sense. So three centre-halves. I think Jan Vertonghen at left centre-half seems like the obvious choice. A guy who's played left-back and centre-back at, you know, club and international level. Perfect sort of ball player in that position. A little bit of a worry about his lack of pace, maybe, but I think we can just about cover that off. In the middle, it has to be Virgil van Dijk, the £75 million man. Who else? I mean, absolutely, who else would you have in the middle of defence? He can marshal it. He can obviously play the ball out from there as well, and he can be a stopper, the kind of guy who steps up into midfield and puts an end to things if he has to. Right centre-back, I think, is an obvious choice, and I think it's Joe Gomez. It's harsh on Toby Alderweireld, who is a good player and a good ball player, but Gomez, when fit this year, he's blown me away. His composure on the ball, his long-legged interceptions, his ability in the air, his tackling, everything about him just stinks of being a brilliant, brilliant centre-half, and especially a ball-playing one. The fullbacks are automatic choices. Liverpool got the best fullbacks in Europe, you know, as a unit. Trent Alexander-Arnold at right-back, or right-wing-back, I should say, and Andy Robertson at left-wing-back. So it's a Liverpool-dominated side so far. We've got one Spurs man in Jan Vertonghen. I would want to play two in midfield, sitting deep. And this is where it gets really difficult, because you don't want to be too lightweight. And you also need players who can come and offer. We saw Spurs really fall down in Europe a couple of times this year when Victor Wanyama played in midfield. And he's a shadow of the player he once was. He isn't able to offer. When fit, I really want to pick Harry Winks here. I think Harry Winks and Jordan Henderson make a brilliant combo lying deep in midfield, but it makes it very hard for me to get Christian Eriksen into the team. So, what I'm going to do is pick Jordan Henderson and Christian Eriksen deeper in midfield, because I think you allow Eriksen to dictate play a bit further, and if you're pressing all over the pitch, it doesn't matter so much if you're lightweight in midfield. Fabinho is probably the one if you want to add a bit more physicality in the middle, but people underrate how hard-working Jordan Henderson can be and how physical he can be. Obviously, he's going to have to be. But if you're pressing all over the pitch, he doesn't have to be so he doesn't have to break up as much play, because there's just not as much coming through there. I think then it gets really hard. You obviously have to pick Kane up front, like an absolute automatic in the front too. I would like to see Sadio Mane play alongside him, because the form he's been in this season, his pace, his ability to interplay as well, he's been one of the best players in the Premier League for me this season. And it leaves us one spot. In behind the front two, who do you want? Do you want the pressing and the link-up play of Roberto Firmino? Do you want the multi-talents of Dele Alli? I don't think he's had such a great year, to be perfectly honest. Do you even want Heung-min Son in there? I think what I would go for is Mo Salah. And you basically have those three interchanging. Because what people haven't always appreciated about Harry Kane is that one of the things he does best is dips in and out of the front line with Dele Alli. They have great understanding. And if let's say you had this team for a year, they could, if Salah and Kane and Mane could spend time playing together, you would find yourself with a set of three players who understood each other, understood space, and were able to really tear defences apart. That's my combined 11. If you don't agree with it, give us a ring on 0208 7025 58, or you can drop us a WhatsApp message on the same number. Remember to include your name so I can read it out on air. And, well, if you don't like my team, let me know.
This is Love Sport.
Nathan Clark is on the line now, football tactics expert, to give us the lowdown on how these two teams might line up and how the two greater minds in European football might match up against each other. Nathan, how much do you think the two previous clashes between these two teams will inform Saturday night's lineups?
Yeah, I think the clashes are huge, because these are two what I call proactive managers, which means that they have their style, their philosophy, and they're really glued to that. That's sort of how they've been playing the sort of the 4 years they've been facing off together. So they act as good insight as to what kind of game we can expect.
What kind of game do you expect? The traditional kind of, or at least I think the received wisdom, is that Liverpool will have the majority of possession and that Tottenham might try and sit back and play on the counter. But that's not a natural way for them to necessarily play. Who do you think will win that early wrestle for dominance?
I think probably the early wrestle will go to Liverpool. I think that Spurs will want to control the ball. I think they've tried the defensive thing against Liverpool, and that did work for a while back when, you know, Dejan Lovren was starting, but that's not really very viable anymore. So I think that Spurs will want to try and play their A game, possess the ball. And I do think that at first, Liverpool will probably have the better of it, because that's a situation. They love it when the opposition have the ball. They love it when the other team tries to play at the back. I think Spurs will suffer. But I also think Pochettino will make adjustments later on. I think he'll switch the shape around, he'll do something a little odd. He'll put a player in a position you wouldn't expect, and he'll just sort of switch things around, and Spurs will come back into it probably in the second half.
They obviously are hoping to have everyone fit. You know, the Harry Kane question comes up a lot, but you mentioned a surprise player, maybe someone you didn't expect. If you had to pick an unlikely hero for Tottenham on Saturday night, who would it be?
The story of Spurs' season has been the unlikely hero of Moussa Sissoko. So for him to put a bow on that and do something weird, like, I don't know, play out on the left wing, that makes no sense, but at the same time, it makes a lot of sense.
Why has Moussa Sissoko been so good this season? Why has he not done it previously?
I think it's a hard system to learn. It's a hard role to learn. I think at first we did want him as a winger, and now he's moved into central midfield, but I think the simple answer is that Pochettino is such a brilliant coach, and I mean coach in the traditional sense. He actually works directly with a player and works with the tools that Moussa Sissoko has, and the tools that he has are good. He just wasn't rounded as a player. You know, he had a very poor first touch, and that's still there, but you learn to cope with that, to make it work for you, and that's why, I think.
In terms of Harry Kane's inclusion, how does it change how Tottenham might set up? What do they look like if he does start and if he doesn't?
I think it's probably a diamond either way. Essentially, it's whether Son drops out or Lucas drops out. And I think if you poll Spurs fans on that, they'll pretty much be 50-50. I think Son is the better player, but Lucas is in better form. And I think that, I mean, it's a very emotional occasion. We're all quite emotionally invested in how the semi-final went against Ajax, and Moura scored a hat-trick, and that's very hard to ignore.
We've obviously talked a huge amount about Liverpool's fullbacks, and rightly so. You know, they've combined for, what, 31 assists this season. And we had Mickey Hazard and Graham Roberts both on the station talking about stopping them. From a tactical perspective, how do you stop a team with such fluent and dangerous fullbacks as those two?
I think Pochettino has a tendency to only want to put sort of one player out wide at a time. He likes to cram the middle and just leave a fullback on each side. But when it comes to Liverpool, I don't think that works. And I think that Trippier and Rose would be overrun by Robertson and Alexander-Arnold. So I think the trick sitting with that is to find a way to use width. That doesn't necessarily mean, you know, two banks of four, but it can be you have midfielders who start narrow and they burst out wide. But also they need to make the same sort of moves defensively. So I think it's about drawing the Liverpool fullbacks out forward and then getting in the space behind to sort of teach them a lesson, punish them for coming forward.
Chastise them for being so rude as to attack. You're a defender, man. Tart defender. Liverpool are not the same team, clearly, that got to the Champions League final last year. There's obviously some personnel involvement there. Alisson Becker, for example, Virgil van Dijk's grown into the game even more. But how have you seen Jurgen Klopp change this team from last year to this?
Definitely there's a personnel element. I think Naby Keita, he hasn't maybe had the most enormous impact just yet, but I think he will do. I think he's incredible, and I'm glad that he's probably missing for the final. But stylistically, I think that Liverpool has sort of slowed things down a little bit, maybe taken a slightly more defensive mindset, and that's why we've seen Liverpool have such a good record in the league this season, is that they're winning those sort of games against defensive sides again and again.
Nathan, impressively impartial. I know you're a tactics writer, but you are also a Tottenham fan. How nervous are you about tomorrow night, or is there nothing to lose?
No, I'm a mess. I'm sleeping 3 hours a night. I'm sweating constantly. I can't concentrate on anything or get anything done. I'm shaking now.
How do you think it's going to go? Do you think in your heart of hearts Spurs will win?
I simultaneously am certain we'll win and I'm certain we'll lose. So I don't have there's nothing in my heart but confusion. Tactically, if we go back to the idea that Liverpool start strong and Spurs will come back in, I can see it going into extra time at 1-1 or 2-2.
Go on then. Who's going to win it? I'm going to push you for one.
And then if Spurs are still on top when it does go into extra time, it's in their favour for extra time. So I'm going to say Spurs.
All right, OK. Well, you're not going back on, Nathan, because I'm a Liverpool fan. I'm not impressed by that. But thank you very much for that tactical insight. And good luck. I hope you get some sleep eventually. It's all right. On Monday, it'll all be over. And we can all go back to normal life. And Nathan Clark, their tactics expert. Make sure you join the other 12,000 people following Nathan on Twitter, at Nathan A. Clark, he is, for some excellent tactical insight.
This is Love Sport.
I can barely wait for the Champions League final tomorrow night. I imagine Tottenham fans are pretty similar, and Arsenal fans cannot wait to be back in a major European final. Well, or can they? Because Wednesday's insipid performance from the Gunners confirmed what we've all suspected, and frankly been pretty sure of, for quite a long time. This is no longer a club at the top level. And it's not by accident either. I'm not trying to say that it's been deliberately wound down or that Arsenal are being mothballed or sidelined. But there is an explanation, and a pretty obvious one. This is not a squad that has been built soundly. It's not on foundations that are solid. Look at what they have built, and I use the word built very loosely, at Arsenal. There is so much dead wood in that squad. You can go through, and I did this morning, I went through the Arsenal squad and I crossed out players who you wouldn't miss if they were sold. And frankly, it's half the squad. Bellerin, Jenkinson, Monreal, Mustafi, Chambers, Mavropanos, Elneny, Koscielny, Lichtsteiner, Ospina, Ozil, even Mkhitaryan. Very few Gunners, and I've asked them, and if you disagree, you can drop me a text on 0208 7020 558. You can drop me a WhatsApp. I've asked them, and very few would argue with any of those being sold this summer. It's not a good state of affairs at all. Managing change is one of the hardest things to do, and every football team should always be in transition. You need to constantly be turning over a certain percentage of your squad to make sure you keep it fresh, that you're getting rid of the players who aren't good enough and bringing in ones who are. Liverpool know this to their detriment. They lost an absolute stranglehold on English and European football by failing to replace an ageing team. And then when they did realise that they needed to, they did too much too quickly under Graham Souness. Manchester United constantly evolved under Sir Alex Ferguson. And then when he left, they didn't. Too much too soon, gutting the wrong bits. It's hard to pinpoint exactly where Arsenal went wrong, but you can certainly say that towards the end of the Arsene Wenger era, his autocracy, his failure to adapt, should certainly be apportioned some of the blame. But you also have to look upstairs. You have to say, who are the people who allowed this structure to rot? You can't just say the bloke who mops the floors and sets out the furniture. You have to say the people who are in charge of fixing the roof as well. And that is the Kroenkes, the board of directors, the lack of director of football. They're the ones who should also be blamed for the fact that Arsenal's squad has been allowed to turn into a group of players for whom mediocrity is perfectly acceptable. Think about the top teams in England. Tottenham, Liverpool, Manchester United. That's a reflex, that is. Manchester City. Think about what those managers and directors of football demand. Relentless success. Relentless improvement. And that flows throughout the club from the very top to the very bottom. If you are not as demanding as that, and you want to be in the top clubs in the country, you will fall and fail. Now, it's hard for us to relate to this because very few of us are in the top 0.5% of our profession. But remember that that's what footballers and football clubs at the top of the Premier League are. Remember, there are so many football clubs underneath them who fail. But at the very top level, as soon as you start to allow an attitude to infect your club where mediocrity is acceptable, that's it. You will fail and you will fall. It's not unrecoverable, though. Just as Tottenham's 18 months without signing a single player has not left them unrecoverably short. But the gap between the two London clubs is wide. Now, it used to be Arsenal fans singing "It's Happened Again." Well, I'll tell you what, Tottenham fans were starting to sing "It's Happened," and now they're starting to sing "It's Happened Again," because it's Arsenal fans who are now listening to those songs, are humiliated by their North London rivals. And it's only going to get worse this summer. Because for all the players that Arsenal could sell, and I listed them earlier, it's not going to add much to the coffers, is it? This isn't exactly a Boxing Day sale at a designer outlet. This is a car boot sale of the old stuff you're trying to get rid of. The Carl Jenkinsons of this world. God love him, he's a decent bloke, but he's not a good footballer. He's not a Champions League footballer, is he? So Arsenal are hardly going to raise very much money to go on top of their £45 million reported transfer budget. Spurs are going to spend that on a backup centre-half. Spurs are going to spend £250 million, I've heard, this summer. And Arsenal are going to be humiliated by it. Because all of a sudden, in a very short space of time, they've gone from being the dominant club in North London to being the beta club in North London, to being the noisy neighbours who can occasionally have a bit of an impact, but frankly have a squad that isn't worthy of challenging for actual trophies. Because when Tottenham sign a replacement or a backup player for 50 million quid, I've no doubt the Arsenal board directors and go, well, why would you spend 50 million quid on a bloke who's not going to start? Well, the reason is because City do it, because Liverpool do it, because everyone else does it. If you want to compete with your fellow clubs, A, you have to get the structure right, B, you have to get the personnel right, and C, you have to get the investment right. Arsenal cannot pretend they're an elite football club in Europe if they don't spend the right amount of money. They cannot pretend they're an elite football club in Europe if they don't have the attitude that is required for success. Arsenal finished fifth this season. I think that might be a high watermark for the next couple of years.
Love Sport.
I'm now required by law to predict tomorrow night's game, and I've been putting this off for some time. I think I've worked it out. I think it's going to be a really open game, because I just think the way that these two teams, a little bit like the English cricket team, the way they respond to pressure is not to be nervy and to be cautious. I think the way they respond to pressure is generally to go out and play expansive football. So I think there will be goals. And I think that probably suits Liverpool. They're a bit more clinical, got a bit more going forward. I think it's going to be 3-1 Liverpool. There's definitely a bit of heart involved there. It's not exclusively head. There's definitely a little bit there. But it'll be Liverpool. It'll be Liverpool 3-1. I can just about sense it that we'll hang on and claim a sixth Champions League title. Now, I did mention earlier, I wanted to just look at a really interesting set of statistics thrown up on Twitter this morning. It's essentially the adjusted transfer fees. So all of the transfers in English football through the last 30 years adjusted to today's prices. Who do you think is the most expensive signing of all time? Is it Fernando Torres? Nope. Is it Alan Shearer when you adjust it? Nope, it's not. Andrei Shevchenko, at today's price, would have come out at £163.5 million. Just £1 million more than Wayne Rooney. United are high up there with Ferdinand and Rooney. But the club that feature the most in the top 10 are Chelsea. Because they've got Shevchenko, 160, Essien, 150, Drogba, 140, Torres, 140, Sean Wright Phillips, would you believe it, £125 million. And then just outside the top 10, Ricardo Carvalho, 119. So what the point I want to make from this, because City, by the way, big spenders Man City, Sergio Aguero is their top signing. And he comes in at £108 million. 16th on the list. So Kevin De Bruyne is only the second City player, and he's 24th at £98.3 million. What you're saying here is there's been a lot of spending from Chelsea, and they haven't dominated English football in the same way as City has. City haven't done this by mistake. They've done it with good planning, and they've learnt from Chelsea's mistakes. It's about strategically spending and going about it the right way and creating a culture of success. Now, I don't think Chelsea have done that consistently. Yes, they win a reasonable number of trophies. But have they been as dominant as Man City? Absolutely not. Now, I know City haven't won the Champions League, but let's face it. Who really thinks that that's not a question of when rather than if? We all think Man City will end up winning the Champions League. They've won more trophies than Chelsea did in the same period of time anyway, because they've been more sensible. They it turns out, haven't spent quite as much as Chelsea did. What I'm saying is City aren't the best team in England by accident, and it's going to take a heck of a lot to catch up with them.
This is Love Sport.
I'm sat in the pub with Danny Murphy, which is just a normal Friday lunchtime, friendly, but we're not drinking. Danny, why don't you tell us a little bit about why we're here at the George in Borough?
Yeah, it's an initiative with Green King that I'm supporting, Summer of Sports, which is the idea, basically, with this wonderful summer we've got coming up, is to not be feeling flat after last year's World Cup and everyone out enjoying it, England doing well, because there's so much sport. We've got the Ladies World Cup, we've got the Nations League, we've got Wimbledon. And just to appeal to more families, really, to come to these venues. 900 venues, outdoor areas, big screens. It's not just blokes down the pub, you know, watching football, getting drunk. That's not the idea. So, yeah, it's a good initiative, and it all kicks off with this wonderful Champions League final, which I think everybody on the planet's looking forward to.
It's going to be an amazing game. Two teams pretty well matched, obviously play very attractive styles of football. Lots been talked about the managers here. Who do you think it matters more to win this trophy and kind of get that off their back a little bit?
I think in terms of inwardly, it matters to both of them equally. They're very passionate men who want to do well. But in terms of a club, it matters to both. You could argue it matters more to Spurs, which might seem strange, because of the fact that Liverpool's progression has been enormous. They are competing with Manchester City. They are competing in the two Champions League finals 2 years. So they're there. You know, they're going to win something, the way they're playing, with the team and squad they've got. If Spurs won it, gives them ability to make more money, attract better players, keep the ones they've got, keep the manager. I think it's probably a bit more... That's not to say if Spurs lost it, they wouldn't do those things. I'm just suggesting that in terms of the progression that Spurs want to make, this is a much bigger thing for them. Whereas even if Liverpool lost, they'd be devastated, but you'd still fancy them to be competing with Manchester City next season.
In terms of that progression, you know, there's lots of numbers being thrown around this summer. Someone saying £200 million to spend for Tottenham. What are the areas you think they need to strengthen most, irrespective of whether they win on Saturday or not?
It's a good question. A lot of people say, don't they, Spurs' best 11 compete with anyone. So, you know, there's a couple of things, really. Before you start... If Alderweireld goes and Eriksen goes, then they're going to need replacing. So there's some areas. Although I like Sanchez, you need more than two good centre-halves. I think in midfield for Tottenham, one of my favourites, Moussa Dembele, left. And although I think Winks is a terrific young player and Sissoko's done well, I don't think either are as good as Dembele was. So they've weakened in that area for me. So I think midfield. And probably at the back if Alderweireld goes, and maybe the fullback areas, you know, just more competition. People will always want to see more attacking players, but I suppose then you have to look at the fitness of Lamella. Is he going to compete? Is he going to be injured again? Son, Eriksen, Moura, terrific players. Kane. Tottenham fans always talking about another striker. I always say the same thing: who are you going to get that's better than Son or better than Moura playing instead of Kane and happy to sit on the bench?
There's not many of them, that's for sure. On the other side, Liverpool, as you say, two Champions League finals in 2 years. But this isn't the same Liverpool team that got to the final last year. How do you think they've evolved?
Confidence has grown. Players, they actually look even fitter this season, like sharper. Hungrier. Maybe that disappointment's made them hungrier. Won a lot of games late. You know, even a bit of luck here and there, but you make your own luck. They've got the best centre half in the world, who took his time just settling in, and now he's got that. He's happy in his surroundings. He's leading them now. The keeper's more settled. Competition for places has been good. I think there's been an improvement. Well, they're not a big improvement because of the points they made up. You can see that. But when you win games and you play well, and it keeps happening, the confidence grows. And now I don't know about you, but when I watch Liverpool play, generally, they look like a team who think they're going to win. You know, like City do. City go out and you always think, they look confident. Don't they look cool? Whereas on the ball, Liverpool now, going into games, and you can see other teams more scared of Liverpool now than they've ever been, or they've been in a long time. So I think the progression's been terrific, and also the manager's learned, I think. I think he's learned in terms of the rotation. Maybe the training's been tweaked a little bit because they've played so many games. But I think he deserves great credit for what they've done.
On the other side, the question I know everyone's asking this week is always going to be about Harry Kane. He says he's fit, he's desperate to play. I think all footballers always are. Would you be tempted, if he's 75%, to have him on the bench as an impact sub, or would you risk him from the start?
It's a difficult. I would suggest, my worry as a coach with any player who's coming back from an injury, no matter how good, is if you bring him on as a sub and he breaks down. Now, you could always leave another sub spare, but that's... So do you start them and just see how long they can go for? And I think that's probably what will happen. The thing is, you only really know, and I've been in those positions in squads where players are trying to get fit for a game and they've been out a while, you have to see them in training. And he has to be honest with himself as well. You know, everyone wants to play in a Champions League final, but what's the point if you're not quite at it? But the manager, he knows him well. The bigger problem for me is if he does start him, it's not about Kane. I think he'll last 60 minutes, 70 minutes. I think adrenaline will get him through. It's more who you leave out. Because Son Eriksen and Ali have been his first choice. Does Lucas Moura get left out for scoring a hat-trick in the semi-final? I mean, if that does happen to him, I don't know how I'd cope with that personally. But it is, it's not, you know, someone's going to be disappointed, aren't they?
That's why managing is such a hard job. Just finally, Danny, you're obviously a man with split loyalties this weekend. I assume there's no half and half scarf. Who are you supporting and which way do you think the game will go?
Well, I grew up a Red, you know. I was a kid as a Red, season ticket holder, and I'd rather see Liverpool win than Spurs. I have to openly admit that. But there's no team I'd choose ahead of Spurs who I'd want to win it if Liverpool lost it, if that makes sense.
It does.
My heart wants Liverpool to win and my head says Liverpool will win.
What do you think the score will be?
I think it'll be tight for the majority, but I think as the game goes on, it'll open up and it'll suit Liverpool. I think Liverpool maybe by two.
This is Love Sport.
It's our guy in Madrid. Yes, well, we sit around and wait for the clouds to clear. Guy Watts is sunning himself in Madrid, soaking up the atmosphere and the sangria, I'm sure. Although it's early, right? Although it's never too early for a drink on a Friday in Madrid, I'd have thought, Guy.
Well, for those of us not working, I think it's fair to say. But no, I've been staying very much off the sauce chains, off the sangria, off the cervezas, don't you worry. Staying nice and professional for my appearances on Love Sport Radio. Don't you worry about that.
Well, first time for everything, I suppose. You mentioned earlier that there are a lot more Liverpool fans than Spurs fans. A bit of a surprise, I'd have thought, given that, you know, the allocation is the same. You'd have thought it would have been a bit more of a 50-50 split.
Yeah, I don't want to sort of say definitively there are far more Liverpool fans here. The areas I've been around, which is predominantly the one around the Plaza Mayor, which is right in the heart of the old part of Madrid, does seem to have a lot more Liverpool fans, although I think it's evened up a little bit in the last 24 hours or so. Down at the Puerta del Sol, which is just another square down the road, there are a lot more Spurs fans down there. So it is quite evenly split. And what I think it is important to point out is of the Spurs fans I've spoken to, they have come from far and wide. Most of the Liverpool fans I've spoken to have, as the song goes, come from Liverpool, but the Spurs fans, as including the ones you heard from about half an hour ago, have come from America, they've come from Ukraine and Russia, they've come from the Far East as well. We've had some from Thailand and Hong Kong. So, you know, if there were points for that, extra points for how far you've come, I think the Spurs fans would be evening things out pretty well.
Well, of course, there are no points, so it'll just be nil-nil at the beginning of the game. There are no points for fans, full stop. I don't know if you've been out to the Wanda quite yet, but I understand it's a little bit out of Madrid. I wonder, is there going to be some sort of pilgrimage to the stadium tomorrow night?
Well, I was speaking to a local about this earlier, a friend of yours actually, Michael Hinks, who's a journalist based out here, and he was saying how for Atletico Madrid, it's been both brilliant news, this new stadium, not unlike Tottenham Hotspurs in being kind of modern, state-of-the-art, but it's not as the old one was, the Vicente Calderon, the much-loved stadium that they played in before, at the heart of the city. Atletico, of course, the club of the people, rather than the royalty, if you like, as Real Madrid is. And yeah, I feel like it's slightly lost the soul of the club by moving it out of town. And here in Madrid, which isn't a city on the scale of somewhere like London, you know, a 45-minute journey, which is what it is from the centre, is quite a long way. We wouldn't think too much of that in London, but yeah, it's quite a long way out of town. I'm not going to be going there myself today. I might pop up there tomorrow to soak up a bit of the atmosphere before the game. I think there might be some screens nearby, but I think everyone who hasn't got a ticket, of which there are many people, are wondering exactly how many screens there are going to be, because there's talk that even the fan zones are going to be closing at about 6. So there could yet be a lot of Liverpool and Spurs fans roaming the streets in the early hours of tomorrow evening, wondering where exactly they're going to watch their beloved team in the Champions League final.
I mean, that seems absolutely insane, because we know there are a lot of fans who've travelled without tickets. I imagine they're not too bothered. If you go out there, you expect not, you know, and you haven't got one, you're not expecting to go to the game. But if it's then difficult to watch it, you might get a lot of very disappointed fans.
You might, and I mean, you're guaranteed to have kind of at least 30,000 or so disappointed fans, how many there are of each side. One of those is going to end up extremely disappointed on Saturday night. I think also, as Michael, who I mentioned a moment ago, was pointing out earlier, a slight shame from the point of view of it being in Madrid. While I wouldn't question it as a great choice of city for host of the Champions League final in general, the fact that both Madrid teams went out of the competition in the last 16, there's no return for Cristiano Ronaldo as there might have been if Juventus had made it. There's no Barcelona to add a real bit of needle to the game. You know, I think it'll hopefully contribute to the atmosphere being maybe a little bit friendlier than it might have been otherwise. But yeah, there's a sense maybe that the locals haven't been quite as embroiled in the build-up, excited by it, as obviously we all have back at home, and especially those supporters that have made it out here have been.
Madrid, the city, Guy, as I know you've been working a lot, but you also seem to have swallowed a history textbook because you were telling me all sorts of dates and numbers yesterday. How have you found it to visit as a city?
Really enjoyed it, actually. Yeah, it maybe doesn't get quite the same amount of coverage and credit as maybe its Catalan sibling Barcelona, and certainly not as much as the likes of Paris and Rome, but I've really enjoyed it. Yeah, as I say, I'm here in the Madrid de las Austrias, a name that has links to its Habsburg past, which was during the 16th and 17th centuries, since you asked. I'm looking at the statue of King Felipe III in the centre of this square, the Plaza Mayor. A meeting point, by the way, a popular meeting point under the Bulls of the Horse. So there you go. There's a little bit of a bonus fact for you. And I made it over to the Museo del Prado earlier, one of the world-famous museums, of course, here in Madrid. There was a queue around the block to get in there. I was quite glad that I wasn't a tourist for 5 minutes there. But I would love to come back here and have a little bit more time to visit, because there are some great parts, some great museums, and certainly some great bars to explore. More bars, by the way, per person than any other city in the world. 6 bars for every 100 people, and Liverpool fans and Spurs fans for that matter certainly making the most of that in my experience so far.
Before I let you go and explore more of these wonderful bars, Guy, because this is the last time we'll speak before the festivities on Saturday, what's your prediction for the game? Which way are you swinging at the moment?
Well, I'm going to try not to say 2-1, because that seems to be what most people are going for. I would like to think it might be quite a high-scoring game. Obviously, both teams have had such incredible journeys there, dramatic journeys there. I don't know, I could see it going to extra time. I think it could be 2-2 in normal time, although Liverpool have had much the better of their recent league meetings. They've normally been decent games to watch, so I'm optimistic that it'll be exciting, that there will be some goals. I think if I had to choose it, I think Liverpool are rightly favourites. I think maybe 3-2 to Liverpool, possibly 3-1 Liverpool, but I wouldn't like to bet against this Spurs side, and you know, they could have the small matter of Harry Kane either from the start or off the bench, which will make some sort of difference, I'm sure.
You've been listening to a podcast edition of The James Gray Show. Remember to leave us a rating and a review, but only nice ones. I don't take criticism well.